Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Before we jump into our program, let's do our day in history on this August the 22nd. This was the day in 1862 that Claude Debussy, a composer, classical composer, French composer, was born. One of my favorites, actually. Dorothy Parker, American poet and writer, born on this day in 1893. This is the day that Dave Dellinger is an American activist, was born in 1908, born in the Chicago 8, an anti-war activist during the Vietnam War, was born on this day in 1908. And we'll be hearing this music all during the next 2 hours. This is the day in 1917 that John Lee Hooker was born, one of the great blues musicians of all time. And Ray Bradbury was born on this day. We'll talk about that another day. We had a very interesting conversation with him about 15 years ago in the air that we'll talk about another time. It's also the day that Chuck Brown was born in 1936, who was a guest on the show before he died in 2012 and gave us Go-Go. This is the day in 1978 that Jomo Kenyatta, the first president of Kenya, died. And on this day, Huey P. Newton was murdered in 1989, co-founder of the Black Panther Party. That deserves a conversation on its own, both his death, his life, and who he was. This day in history, in the year 564, Columba, going through Scotland, said he saw a monster in Loch Ness. And before that, many people talked about and still talk about the possibility of that. This is the day Charles I, in 1642, started the first English Civil War. And in 1791, Toussaint Louverture and others launched the Haitian Slave Rebellion in Saint Domingo that led to the founding of the first independent black republic in the Western Hemisphere, Haiti. This is also the day in 1843 that at the National Negro Convention, abolitionist Henry Highland Garnett, the son of a runaway slave, called for a slave revolt and called for people to rise up. He was denounced by Frederick Douglass on that day for his calling for a revolution. His slogan, rather die freemen than live to be slaves, let your motto be resistance, was actually the motto of U.S. colored troops going to the war in the Civil War. It was a very famous day in history that we don't much talk about. This was the day in 1846, the Second Federal Republic of Mexico was established. United States annexed Mexico. It was also part of the anti-slavery struggle because Mexico freed its slaves much earlier, which is one of the reasons that people fought so hard not to become part of the United States. This is the day in 1864 the Red Cross was formed. The day in 1867 that Tuskegee was founded. Officially found, even though it was started in 1865, wasn't officially recognized until 1867. On this day, the first black college in Tennessee, Fisk University. And this was the day that the women flight attendants organized their first association to fight for their rights. Because at that time, they were forced to retire at the age 32, remain single, and only reach a certain weight and height, and form their union to fight against that. In 1950, Althea Gibson becomes the first black competitor in international tennis. And this is the day the Farm Workers Union began in 1966 that led to the famous grape boycotts. We talked about this the other day. In 1979, 200 black leaders meeting in New York expressed support for Andrew Young, who was forced to quit as ambassador to the United Nations because of his meeting with the PLO. And they demanded that more African Americans be part of shaping American policy. In 1996, Bill Clinton changed the welfare system, and that'll be a show we're coming up with soon. And this day will live in infamy. 2007, the Texas Rangers routed the Baltimore Orioles 30-3, the most runs scored by a team in modern Major League Baseball history. We want to forget that one. That's this day in history. We are about to have a conversation now about Bradley Manning, who received 35 years and announced this morning in his second statement where he is prepared to go, telling people not to be sad, that he is going to stand up to it. He said today that I am a woman and I want to be referred to from now on as Chelsea Manning. We are talking this morning with Kevin Gastola, who is co-author of the book The Truth Consequences, the U.S. versus Bradley Manning, and Sam Faddis, retired CIA operations officer and author of many, many books and a constant guest on the show. His latest book is a novel, Kaffa. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you both on the show with us. So let's talk about this. One of the things I think we all expected Bradley Manning to get time for this. He expected it. He got 35 years. First, let's do a quick analysis of what you think about this sentence before I go into some more subjects. Sam, I'm going to start with you and go to Kevin.
I would say 35 years is about what I expected him to get from a military court.
And what do you what's your thinking about the sentence? You think he was right?
Well, and I'll factor into this the fact that I was not only an intelligence officer, but before that, for a time period, I actually was a JAG officer and practiced in court martial. You know, in a military court, you're going to get a very, very serious view of a guy who's in uniform and is disclosing classified information and deliberately moving it off systems and this kind of thing. That's, you know, they're just, this is going to be a very grave matter to them, and it's exactly what I would expect would be decades of time.
Kevin?
I share Sam's view. It's a very realistic analysis. I had prepared a story expecting a possible sentence of 25 years, and so I knew that there was going to be a harsh sentence. One of the things I'll just add is the reality that throughout the court-martial, we had this dubious legal theory underpinning a aiding the enemy charge that I think if you talk to many military law experts, they weren't quite certain that this was something that was reasonable. It was pretty controversial when people were discussing it, but yet the judge never dismissed this offense. Now, he was acquitted, but to me, that was always a signal that she took the allegations against him very seriously, and that, you know, there was this culture inside the military that said what he had done was, in some respects, more troublesome than, you know, accidentally or purposefully killing a civilian or perhaps engaging in torture that you were authorized by a superior to commit, because there is this sanctity of protecting the classified information.
Well, let me ask you the same question, Kevin. Do you think it was just? Do you think he should have gone to prison?
I think in covering this that Bradley Manning has accepted responsibility for his offenses. And, you know, I think he was willing to do a short amount of time in prison, whatever came to him. And then as his defense articulated in their closing argument and sentencing, they were hoping he could get out and begin a life. I found that to be a fairly reasonable view, just given the fact that in open court, there was no presentation of any evidence of anybody being killed or hurt. Or everything was all alleged risk and mostly speculative. So I'm not sure, given, you know, I know it's unprecedented and he was convicted of 20 offenses, and I think it's rather complex. I mean, I do think that he should have, I mean, perhaps a short sentence is reasonable and to be expected, but I'm not certain that I'm on board with this 35-year sentence.
So, you know, this is also one of the things that we a lot of the press has painted Manning as kind of a weak character, as somebody meek and all the rest. But folks who know him, folks who've been on the show before, actually, you know, whether you agree with what Manning did or not, he came up as a pretty stalwart, strong guy through this whole thing, even until the very end when he was sentenced, and coming out in the last day here saying, "I am not a man, I'm a woman." As a transsexual, he wants to be treated as a woman and be able to have hormone changes to become a woman, biologically speaking. And so, I mean, this is and then when you talk about somebody like Manning being thrust into a military prison system like that, which where people like Manning, especially transsexuals, don't fare well. I mean, what about that aspect of this? Either way, Kevin, go ahead, Kevin. Then we'll go to Sam.
Okay. Well, I just. Sitting through testimony, one of the most powerful days of the trial for me, just in terms of the content that was coming out about Manning, was the day where he gave his apology statement. And before that, we had the psychologists who reviewed him coming forward, sharing their assessments of him. The psychologist, the captain, his name was Captain Michael Worsley, who looked at him in Baghdad and was talking about how he was in a hyper-masculine environment, and it would have been very difficult for him with these gender confusion or gender identity issues, and he wouldn't have wanted to bring those to a superior because, you know, just inside the military, as I understand it, how he was explaining it, would have been up to possibly being discharged or bringing those forward. And then, you know, separately, it seemed like he was also saying he was gay, and then he also had gender confusion issues. So if he had come out as gay, obviously, under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that's another set of issues on its own, even though the prosecutors seemed to adopt a reality during the trial that they would have allowed him to remain in service. But obviously, this coming out today just shows the character of Bradley Manning to do what he would like to do and remain a consistent person.
Sam, I mean, how do you view this? I mean, having been through the kind of military and intelligence service, how do you view that question about his sexuality and what's going to happen to him next?
Well, I have no doubt, based on what I've read about Manning, that he must have been going through some very difficult things personally. They would have been difficult under any circumstances. They were made more difficult by the environment that he was in. You know, as an aside, I would say I feel for him in that regard. That's not an excuse for committing criminal offenses. I don't personally find him to be a weak character. I mean, a guy who's young and is going through dealing with a lot of different issues, yes. But, you know, what he did here, he did over an extended period of time. It took a certain significant amount of willpower, whether you agree with him or not. And the commitment to doing it. This was not a one-off offense. In regard to his confinement, I mean, prison is not going to be fun for anybody, obviously. The military system is really probably significantly better in this regard, I would say, than the civilian system, in the fact that the military system has far fewer prisoners and is a much more controlled environment, whereas many civilian institutions are so overwhelmed with numbers that they really can't handle inmates. The military system, relatively speaking, is in pretty good shape.
So there are people who have written about this, who were on the show the other day, are not on the show today, though. We'll come on again as we look at this in the coming weeks, who have argued that while Bradley Manning's headed to prison, those who kind of authorized things that he exposed, nothing is happening to them at all. So even if you argue that he broke the law by releasing this information, some of the information he released kind of begs to be investigated, and nothing's happening.
Well, I actually articulated this view. This is something that I actually am willing to defend as an argument, just because I do think that in some ways, you know, Bradley Manning does come out looking like the fall guy for our wars in Iraq and maybe to a certain extent in Afghanistan, though that was always considered a more legitimate war than Iraq. But, you know, the main thing that I think I want to bring through to people who are listening is just that it's my opinion that the government could have declassified some of these significant alleged examples of harm or damage and not presented them all in closed sessions during the sentencing phase, and at least picked three or four things out of how many examples they think they have and put those out for us to have a discussion today so that, you know, as Manning is going to Fort Leavenworth and a sentence for 35 years in prison, you and I could talk about them. And let's say, for example, it had been his release has caused a human rights activist to be killed by this organization. Well, then we could talk about whether that was something that was reckless and negligent enough to warrant a 35-year sentence.
And a final thought, Sam Faddis. Oh, we just lost Sam? All right, well, I want to appreciate both of you for being guests in the show today. Kevin Gostolo, who is author of the book Truth Consequences, the U.S. versus Bradley Manning, Sam Faddis, novelist, writer, analyst, former CIA operations officer. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very short break and come right back and go to the issues facing Baltimore City with 20 murders in 80 days with some community activists and thinkers. Stay with us.